All right, welcome back. We are back for the OmniTalk Fast Five. This is a special day because we are actually live in front of an audience at Q4.
So Chris, this means like we can't take multiple takes then, right? Like, so
no.
We're just, it's like a freight train. It
one
doesn't
and
stop.
Done, guys.
One and done. Okay,
cool. One and done. We're gonna
good
have to
know.
Nail it right from the get-go. But I think we can do it. So is everyone out there ready?
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Wow, end of the day, crowd is alive.
Fantastic. The beers are working.
The beer,
that's great.
The beer and wine.
All right, so let's get right to the headlines. So headline number one, we'll do this roundtable style. Headline number one, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Mario Lopez has a new shoe collection.
Yes.
Perfect.
Slater.
And I'm totally kidding. There's no way that's number one, but it is true. It was a headline this week, but there's no way we're going to spend any time on that whatsoever. So the real headline number one, if you didn't see it, Amazon actually opened up a store. Amazon Fashion opened up a store on Baker Street in London this week, okay? It's an interesting store. It runs for, 5 days? Yeah, the 23rd to the 27th.
Right.
And it's going to change over three times. All right. The first 2 days are, I think it's, fitness is in the middle. The first few days, the last few days is workwear, streetwear. So anyway, the assortment changes over. Mm-hmm. And the idea, they're going to have brands like Levi's and Puma and things like that in the store. And it's going to work just like GH Labs. So basically like what we showed a couple weeks ago. If you guys haven't seen it down in Mall of America, check it out. But the way that experience works, you go in with your Amazon app and there's smile codes next to all the product. Mm-hmm. You scan it and then it gets delivered to your house. So Amazon, for the first time, is moving into the fashion business in a very interesting and experimental, quote, pop-up, as we talked about at the conference, way. So what do you guys think?
I guess I'll dive in here, and I know you have probably a comment. Amazon's been trying to get into fashion for a long time, right? Like, we've been talking about fashion for so long, and I know personally I've had that secondary Amazon fashion cart sitting in my shopping cart that I notice every day that I haven't actually checked out on. And I think what's interesting is, you know, with this new job, I got to buy a bunch of new shoes because all our clients are shoe companies. But the point is, though, I'm not confident enough in the Amazon platform, which is unique, to actually purchase clothing from mm-hmm. there right now, or mm-hmm. shoes, right? Mm-hmm. I've purchased a lot of basics, which mm-hmm. I think is another conversation we won't get into today.
Love that.
Your like, white tees.
What? Yeah. See, Rod. Wow. Good memory. But I think it shows that Amazon's looking at physical retail for a way to supplement these really hard to get sections or verticals really in clothing and style and fashion. So I'm pumped by it. I think it's just the start, and I think they're going to expand physical footprints like this to dive into the fashion market more and more.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, the thing that kind of came across loud and clear for me is watch out story, because Amazon is doing this in 1 week, 5 days. They're turning the store over three times. They're not just turning a store over, they're also doing live events. They have yoga in store. They're having DJs come in store. Like, there is an entire theme. So we'd see like story or even traditional retailers are doing this like calendar year of January and February is, you know, cleaning house and fitness. And, you know, there's this seasonality to retail. And now they're condensing that into 1 week. So it's like game on, people.
As Macy's
Amazon
boasts
is doing it again.
Mobile point of sale, Amazon comes in 12 hours and just completely takes care of
totally
business.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different way of doing retail, right? I mean, so in a sense, you have the operating system so that anyone can stand up any experience. To me, it's not even so much retail, it's almost like a new way of product placement. So hey, brand, you want to stand up this thing in our store? Sure, you can have this day, do all the work, get it in there, we'll give you the system for commerce to make it happen, and boom, you're done, you're ready to go.
I think it also brings a new workforce into this that you know, coming from a marketing and advertising background, you think about the people that are involved in things that are going away, like photo shoots are being replaced by 3D product images and things like that. So you have this whole community of stylists, right? They've been working on sets of shoots, and they're used to these quick timelines. They're used to producing an entire, you know, catalog of content in a few weeks or in a month. And I think what I'm looking forward to is, you know, in this Amazon store, you have stylists that are there to help you with things like you were talking about earlier. They're there to help you with sizing, with fit, with putting outfits together. And I'm curious if we're going to start to see like a new foray for some of these traditional like editorial stylists being exposed to an opportunity like working in quick change retail store settings too.
We could talk about this for another hour.
Yeah, this one, I mean, it's an interesting point because it tells you, like, it's a different way to go to market. I think for CPGs in the audience too, it's like, there's different ways to do this. I think if I was a retailer, like, you know, I would be trying to create this capability. It's actually not very hard. You're just talking about scan and go and plugging into a fulfillment network and just making sure that app experience works pretty well.
Right.
Because the CPGs aren't going to necessarily want to have all their eggs in this Amazon basket either. So there's an opportunity there for somebody to capitalize on this. But anyway, pretty cool. They also opened up their second ghost or their first ghost store in San Francisco this week, which is crazy.
And forgot our tinfoil at home.
Yeah.
Right? Tinfoil hat.
You guys didn't talk about Business Prime either, that also was announced this last week.
What's that, real quick?
So Business Prime is Amazon's kind of partnership with Amex that is now providing like financing and credit cards with higher limits for small businesses. You know, so now they're going to be a financing organization for small business.
Why not?
The Amazon drug just keeps getting stronger.
It's going to be Jeff
Bezos, and I love powerful it. Drug dealer in America.
There That's you right. go.
As seen on Forbes. All right. Carter, you want to take us to the next one?
I think Ann's taking number two.
Oh, is Andrew number two? Yep. All right,
yes,
perfect.
Yes, because it's about Alibaba, and you know that I love me some,
you do some, love some
China retailers. So Alibaba talked about their plans for Single Day. So they actually kicked it off just this last weekend. And so Singles Day, it's November 11th, 11/11. Not to be confused with the other Singles Day that we came across while researching this story.
Which I don't talk about in public.
Yeah, yeah, we won't go down that path. But, you know, we talked about it today. Maria mentioned it in her presentation. Singles Day last year did $25 billion in sales. And just to give you a sense of the context of that, last year for Black Friday in the United States, we did only $5 billion in sales in one day. So just to kind of give you a sense of the magnitude of what these retailers, both JD and Alibaba, like what this means and what this means for the U.S. retailers. They also have 180,000 brands participating. This is the 10th anniversary of Singles Day. And the last time, or the first Singles Day had only 27 brands. So again, they're increasing the magnitude of what they're putting out for this very special holiday. And they did some fashion shows as kind of a precursor to get people involved. They can see things on the fashion show, buy those things that they saw
during that live fashion. That's a cool video. What's it called?
See Now, Buy Now.
Yeah, they have a cool video out on the internet that shows how it works.
Right. And I think the thing for me that really kind of encapsulates what this means for, again, for U.S. retail is that we see Amazon doing this with Prime Day, right? It's not about Black Friday and Cyber Monday anymore. Like, these companies are creating their own holidays, and they're creating days where they're, I mean, $25 billion in revenue. Last year, Alibaba did $17 billion in revenue. I mean, this year, who knows what? They're not even announcing projections because it could be so huge. So something to keep your eyes on.
It's getting stronger.
Do this one quick. I think I don't have a ton of insight on that specific thing, but I think it's important to realize often we sit in a vacuum of the United States, right? Mm-hmm. When I worked at Apple retail here, we knew Singles Day was coming because Apple would do stuff overseas as well for that. A big thing for all retailers. And I think we just sometimes forget that there are gigantic earth moving events like this that aren't happening between, you know, Miami and Seattle, right? It's happening all around the world.
Well, and they can come to the U.S. and you can see this start to percolate. I mean, Wayfair had, what is it, Way Days out back in, April?
That's
or
right,
May,
yeah.
Which they said was fantastic. And you've got Prime Day. And who knows? I think we're going to probably talk about this too. But JD, you know, JD.com is starting to make a play in the U.S. But to Ann's point, I wrote about this last year too. But I just can't wait for the day where Amazon says, you know what, Black Friday, forget it. We're doing a new Prime Day, like November 22nd, when all your payrolls in store are set, all your merchandising has been done, and you can't do anything about it, but we can turn on a dime and make it happen. Mm-hmm. When that day comes, it's going to be interesting.
Cancel Christmas.
Right. Well, never do that. But yeah, exactly.
Or you almost spoiled number three for me.
Segue. Yeah. I know. Segue. Right?
Okay, so what's important to realize about overseas, specifically China, right, is Alibaba does have some competitors. It was actually mentioned a couple times today, which I think was super cool.
That's right.
But JD.com, Alibaba's main e-commerce competitor in China, plans to actually launch a flagship online store here in the U.S. in partnership with Google, right? Pretty cool. We talked about Google's, you know, upswing, but Google actually invested 550 $150 million in JD.com earlier this year, which is now coming to fruition as they look to open this flagship store. So basically, the idea is JD.com products will be available here in the U.S. I think the interesting thing here, as we mentioned, Google is trying to keep pace with Amazon. They're looking for these partners to supercharge that growth. They're going to get a logistical win as well, as JD.com is actually going to distribute products from their own warehouses here in the U.S. For JD, you have instant credibility in the United States, obviously a huge market. And I think going back to Google too, if we look at China as a market, by 2025, they're expected to take on $88.1 billion of retail, right? Which is insane. The other interesting thing, which I don't think we'll get into too much, is it comes at an interesting time between China and U.S. relations, but I think it's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't have too much to comment on this one. I mean, I think it's just it's another example being emblematic of companies that are rooted in tech. You know, we talked about this earlier today too, but companies rooted in tech coming over and really trying to carve out their share of the United States retail market,
totally.
Whether it's Amazon, JD. We don't know what Alibaba is going to do yet. And Google's invested heavily in JD too now at this point. And so they're going to try to make this as successful as possible. We've talked about what is Google's next play, right? They're going to continue to augment this marketplace. The marketplaces in China are already more inherently more social in terms of that social commerce line that we talk a lot about. So it'll be interesting to see how they can draft off the successes there. God knows still what could be done physically with the right type of fulfillment capabilities and knowledge that JD might bring to the table once
totally.
It gets established overseas.
And Google did open they're opening their first hardware store in Chicago. So
right.
Who knows? The timing just kind of might work out perfectly.
Who knows?
Google seems to be thinking about retail a lot more than they ever have in the past. All right, number four. So this one's kind of fun. Instacart, believe it or not, raised another $600 million in funding recently. So that takes their valuation up to $7 billion. Just 6 months ago, they raised money as well, and that valuation was $4 billion, okay? Pretty staggering when you think about how much money they've raised just this year and just how much their valuation has increased. So to give you an idea, Instacart started in 2012. They have partnerships with 15,000 grocery stores across 4,000 cities. Kroger, Costco, Walmart are among their clients. I think this one's interesting. I think, you guys, I'm starting to think, we've talked about Instacart as the Trojan horse. Like, they get the data, they know what everyone's buying at every retailer, then they could become a retailer themselves. I'm not so sure about that anymore. I think it's a risk, but I'm starting to think this thing's a little bit overheated in the sense of, hey, it's a third party who's coming in and doing the picking for you.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon's in Whole Foods. What's going to happen from there? Like, are they just going to do that better? Walmart's going to go after this. Kroger and the Ocado relationship is going after this too. We've seen other things in micro warehousing. I have to think over time there might be better solutions, more cost-effective solutions to this. So this is another example. We've talked about brands in the past, other companies. Like, I'm starting to wonder if the valuations are getting a little inflated on this one too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, my question is, are you seeing brands go to Instacart because they have to do it? You can't be
right.
in the grocery business right now or in the big box retail business and not be competing somehow.
It's your only option currently.
Exactly. So you're looking at partnerships with people like Shipt, like Instacart. I think what I'm curious about is, you know, how long do you let somebody else, we talked about this earlier, but how long do you let somebody else maintain all of that customer data before you say, like, okay, we'll do this for the interim as like a band-aid for this solution, but then we have to bring this in-house because that data is so valuable. I just don't see that as a long-term solution. So I kind of think Instacart may be more of a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
It's they're maximizing on the situation right now.
That's interesting.
Carter. Yeah, well, I mean, in your notes here, they talk about doubling the engineering team. I just wonder kind
right.
of what else is in the pipeline for them
right.
and what else they're planning to do. And I couldn't agree more. It's like a band-aid, a really easy way to take care of this now necessary
right.
you know, add-on to whatever your business might be. But I do think it's overheated. You know, you see everyone from Walmart and all those other people, you know, those big players taking it in-house and figuring out ways to do it without third-party partners like this. And I guess the question is the band-aid big enough and plentiful enough to sustain Instacart and at the valuation that they're claiming to be at?
Yeah, it's interesting too. I feel like we've seen this experiment before in terms of just like wholesale and grocery, right? Like, people will, to your point, people will start out their grocery experience maybe using wholesalers, and then they'll start bringing everything in themselves.
Sure.
And even the threat or the potential added, you know, amount in the valuation around Instacart being their own grocery, that's a hard thing to do. I mean, you know, look at SuperValu. SuperValu's business almost just became wholesale because that's what they ended up being the best at. But that didn't make them necessarily a better grocer over time. So, you know, it'll still be, even especially if you're spending all your money on engineering, it's going to be hard to pivot that into retail. So, I don't know. I think it seems like we're unanimous. Everyone feels a little overinflated,
yeah.
or it feels like it's a little overinflated. Carter, you want to bring us home?
Yeah,
number five?
From the big giants to the the small entrepreneurs. Shopify opens a brick and mortar space in Los Angeles. So Shopify has opened a store for entrepreneurs in LA, where there are over 10,000 merchants in the city alone, and 80,000 people, 80,000 companies using Shopify in California, right? So pretty big number. The store is meant to be a physical embodiment of the company's years of experience, helping small businesses really achieve what they need to do online without the burden of investing into entire ecosystems, which is really cool. So the idea is it's a community space. You can book appointments and come together with, you know, one-on-one. I think ideally it grows their business in a really unique way. For me, I love this move. I think if entrepreneurs do, like, I think the not obvious point of this whole thing is that Shopify wins when you have a bunch of new businesses starting and they start selling a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. right? So they win when entrepreneurs, you know, start and grow. And if this is a way for them to do that in one of their hottest markets and say, all right, 10,000 customers, like, we're here, but also the 10,000 more that might come in the next 5 years. I mean, we had a great session today talking about how this young generation is all about entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Like, if you might don't know where to start, walk down the road and, you know, walk into Shopify's place. They can set you up for an account for $49. And,
right.
And as we know, as we saw, you know, in a couple of presentations even today at, you know, Q4, it's an incredibly powerful tool, and they continue to bring these super advanced experiences to small businesses for little to no cost. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, and there's no sense recreating the wheel on e-commerce at this point. Like, people have figured out what works.
Right, and I think that it's not just the young entrepreneurs. I think what you might be forgetting about is that, you know, when I heard this announcement, it made me think of the Apple Store, right? Yeah. You have all of these people who are the boomer generation who still have mom and pop businesses and don't know how to get their business online. Shopify is like that for them. It's giving them an online presence.
Totally.
They have data. Whether or not they use it is another thing, but at least they have a platform and a place to physically go and ask questions and get help on how to get their site up and running, how to stay alive in this, like, very scary world of e-commerce for some of them that they haven't ever had to do. And so I think I love it, and I hope that this test, I mean, they're picking a great location for it, based in LA, with all of the people that are all the style businesses, especially, that are based there, that will be utilizing this space. But I think expansion for this concept, like, put these in malls all over the place.
Totally.
It's your next Apple Store.
So you're all in, both of you guys.
I'm all about it.
We did a Shopify meetup. Remember, we did.
Well, that's
facilitated that panel at that meetup, and there were 250, 300 people crammed into this room downtown Minneapolis, which was not easy to get to at 5 o'clock at night, just learning how to use Shopify and talking about Shopify. It was fascinating. The other thing that I think is interesting about this too is when you think about what they are for online, what will they start to experiment within that space in terms of physical commerce too, so that they can start to learn and understand how their tools and their resources can be used not just in online, but then to help those merchants over time start to do business in a physical space too, a la what we talked about with Amazon at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Who knows if that's part of this plan, but if it was me, it would be, because I think that's really
Well, they're set up to be the perfect technical partner for...
Totally. Why would you want to shift over everything?
They will have space set up too. They kind of downplay... It is supposed to be this kind of co-working space for the entrepreneurs to kind of connect with one another, but they do have space to set up physical shops to kind of do a demo. Soup to nuts tutorial of, like, here's how you do your physical merchandising, and then here's what the digital representation of that looks like.
It's very cool. Very cool. Wow, this may be my favorite week in terms of stories. Those were some really hard, impacting stories. Not counting Mario Lopez, of course. But anyway, all right. So we're gonna bring back something we haven't done in a few weeks, just given logistics. And so, Dan Fawn, if you don't mind, would you bring us back to How Millennial Are You?
Yeah, so how millennial are you? This is a question that's a little interactive, so I want you to grab your phones.
Oh, my phone's over there.
No, I don't have mine. I already failed the test.
Most of us have an iPhone, so
I'm tethered to this chair.
So do I win? Am I more millennial?
If you have a phone on you right now, you're a millennial. The question actually is, do you have the actual phone app? So the thing that you use to call on your home screen or your dock?
Okay.
Your home screen or your dock.
So we'll do this on trust, okay? Pinky swear. All right.
Carter.
You guys are going to be really happy with my response. I actually do for some
reason.
Really? I don't know why.
Is it on your dock?
It's on the dock. Okay.
I feel like this is maybe a different question if you spend half your time in Europe and half your time in the United States.
Well, no, that's the other thing. It goes back to the statistic, or just the fact that millennials don't like to talk on the phone. If someone calls me, or if a friend calls me, or if I call a friend, I might call a friend actually, they won't pick up, and literally within 10 seconds, they'll text, what do you want? Right?
Right.
The only person that leaves me voicemails is my mom.
Right.
So that's what it is. So I do have the phone app. It's hidden back there. But when I look at what's on my phone home screen or my dock, I have FaceTime on my dock because I actually use that more with my friends and my family than talking on the phone.
That's valid.
I think Dan weighted this question in his favor.
Yeah, by the way,
But let's
I saw Dan reorganizing his apps backstage earlier.
Let's get back to the answers here. Somebody did not answer that question, so Anne.
I do, yes.
You do. I do, too. I'm curious in the audience, how many people have the phone app on their dock? How many people do not? That's probably a better way to do it. So Dan, you are by far. So that was zero for no one seeing the audience at home.
Maybe that was a too millennial question.
No, I think you're just, you're Gen Alpha. Josh, is that what it's called, Gen Alpha? Yeah, you're just Gen Alpha, man. You're way ahead
of the curve. Maybe he's Gen Agnostic.
That's right. All right, that was fun. It's always fun to bring that back. So let's transition in. So we've got a live studio audience here with us today at Q4. So we're going to open it up to the group for some questions. What's on your mind? What can we talk about?
And I'll start,
the dialogue together.
One question that was submitted.
Yeah, all sure.
Right, so one question was submitted from Emily at Adidas, so I don't know if you're here or not.
Okay.
But the question is, what is the best way for a large corporate company to make the retail experiences feel more personal to their consumer?
I feel like
I'll repeat the question. So the question is, how can you make your experiences more personalized to the consumer? I can start with that one. I think the number one thing I always recommend to everyone, and it's always a question. It's funny, a lot of people laugh at me when I say this sometimes, which is interesting. But I would say, what's your flywheel? What's your business? What's your brand all about? Mm-hmm. If you've never studied Amazon's flywheel, I always say, go and look at that. I think it's just a brilliant document in its simplicity. And what their brand's about, right? Their brand's about convenience, low price, and selection, right? And so that's how they're going to think about their customer. I think personalization is a little bit of an overused buzzword. It's what's your brand, and then how do you bring that to life? And if you're bringing that to life in the right way through digital and physical, personalization is going to happen regardless. So that's what I always say. Start with your brand. What are your principles? Digital, physical, whatever it is, and start thinking about the tactics, and then put the data plan behind them to measure it longitudinally to decide what works, what doesn't, and then just start the wheel again.
Yeah, I think it's when you look at things like personalization, you look at the amount of work that has to happen to get to true, like to personalization, as I think most of the market knows it. And so I think it's creating an experience that can adapt and respond to your consumers, and never stopping that exploration of what your consumers are looking for, what they're doing, how their habits are changing. You hear a lot of like meeting consumers where they are, and there's various places to do that. And so I think it's not putting to bed like, all right, for Q1 we're gonna do this thing, and then Q2. It's like it's got to be a constant back and forth, push and pull between you and your customers.
Yeah, this sits close to home for me, and I have a ton of answers, but I won't list all of or any of them. I think one of the big things for me is back to the presentation we did earlier today, talking about every person has probably a different expectation for the experience within the store. So if you think about, like, it's easy to use Apple, but if you want to just go in there and grab a dongle and leave, that's very different than going in there and purchasing a $3,000 machine, usually is, right? And having the accessibility to all of those types of things easily for whatever consumers. So, you know, my wife ran in there and needed some headphones, and she was frustrated because she got put in the service queue, right? Which basically means you're going to have someone personally walk you over to the accessories wall, answer all the questions. Both are very valuable experiences, but having those things readily available and accessible by the customer, depending on what their mindset is, I think is something we might not talk about a ton.
I think the one thing I'm remiss not mentioning too, and Microsoft brought this up today, you have to be much more flexible and modular in your overall design principles about how you go about your business too, to try to bring out that personalization. Sure. To your point, if you try to go flexible, we're going to do this on this date, and it's going to work, you're going to lose. So what other questions are out there? Jess.
Being that we're in Target's backyard, love your perspective on their latest brand launch, Smartly.
Sure. I mean, I don't usually talk
repeat
about Target.
The question.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'll repeat the question. Opinions on their latest brand launch, Smartly. We don't usually talk about Target that much because we try to stay outside of the Minneapolis echo chamber. What I'll say about that, though, is it's a great move. Target's been doing a lot of really great stuff on all their brands. And, you know, I think Target's Expect More, Pay Less Promise plays with a lot of what we talked about what is an omnichannel experience? What is a new retail experience, right? If you're going to go spend your time in a physical place, there's a lot of experiential elements to how Target does their business in terms of wide aisles, bright lights. And I think those great brands just play into that. And if I was brandless, I'd probably be watching that pretty closely.
Yeah.
Do you have any early predictions for this holiday season or any things that you think are going to stand out?
Ooh. Oh.
I probably have the least educated of the three, as usual, opinion up here. But I think based on like my personal preference, like I get my holiday shopping done in 20 minutes on Monday morning via Amazon, right? And I think...
And catch up
via the Amazon app early. But I think the point is like the demographic that does that, I think will continue to grow as we realize how big of a pain it is to go to traditional retailers and actually search for things. I also think that you're going to see players like Amazon and probably other e-commerce giants jump into ways to create content around recommendations, right? So you look at BuzzFeed's been always owning the listicle world of top 20 gifts to get your dad. Like, how does that value get played into the e-commerce website so that no longer am I sitting in the search bar wondering what my dad wants? I would really love Amazon just to tell me that because they know, right? Mm-hmm. And like someday I would dream that they could find his account and tell me other things he was dreaming about. And I think that's probably closer than we think.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned BuzzFeed, and I think that you're going to see there's already a lot of pop-ups this time of year because it's holiday. But I think, you know, like BuzzFeed's toy store that they're opening for holiday, things like that are going to become more and more common and just kind of, I think, get more and more over the top. So I would say, you know, we're going to continue to see that trending, these like crazy over the top experiential holiday things, and almost, you know, visiting those spaces or these experiences taking priority over getting like the top gift necessarily. So like, what are you able to do in a physical store to make a memory with your kid? Like going back to the mall Santa almost, but in a bigger, better way, and brands kind of owning that experience. I think that will become more and more of a trend.
Yeah, I'd say two things on that question. I think the one is who's going to take the toy share, right? I think that's the big question on everyone's mind. And I don't know so much that it's as interesting this year to me as it is next year, because I don't think necessarily the retailers, given just how much of a creature of habit they are, they've had enough time to prepare for it adequately. Amazon maybe has, so we'll see what they do. But I think next year could be really fascinating. So we talked about this before. Like if I don't know how many of you guys have kids, but our kids are pretty young. There's this thing on YouTube, Ryan's Toy Review, where this kid gets like an insane amount of views every month, and all the kid does is play with toys, right? And it's amazing. And like that guy, given what we talk about with technology from Amazon, GH Lab, that guy can literally stand up a store, and it could probably be the most successful toy store that's out there for kids next year. I don't think that's happening this year, but I think you'll start to see that stuff in the future. So the toy thing is more interesting to me even more next year. The second thing that I do think is really interesting this year, though, is Amazon Go. Because they continue to open these things up one, if not more, a week. And guess what retailers don't pay any attention to? It's that, right? They're all focused on how am I going to get through holiday, how am I going to sell everything. And I'm afraid we're going to get to like March of next year, we're going to look back and, oh my God, there's suddenly 100 Amazon Go stores that came out of nowhere. Yeah. And no one's going to know what hit them. So I'm actually watching that pretty closely too.
I have a question from the Fast Five segment.
Number four
was around Instacart. You mentioned it may be overvalued and may be sort of a flash in the pan until the retailers figure it out. But if they've solved the user interface, if they've solved the last mile, if they've got all the first party data that they've acquired, is it possible that they just start up their own stores and become a viable player with the traditional brick and mortar being the last piece?
Yeah.
So I'll repeat the question.
Yeah,
I think, Chris, I want you to answer it. The question around Instacart, and so we talked about in the Fast Five, being a little bit overvalued for what it is right now. And the question is, with all the tools that they have at their fingertips, what's stopping them, or do we predict that they might just separate from their partners and become their own retailer?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think, Britton Ladd, actually, who if you guys as in the audience, he's an incredible follow on LinkedIn, and especially he writes for Forbes as well. He's an incredible follower. I think he's one of the best minds in the industry. I take a lot from him. This is his play, right? That Instacart's the Trojan horse and that they're just going to have all this data. I think it's like we talked about. I think the potential is there, but how long will the retailer stay with it as the option for delivery? And they might figure it out. And the question would become, will other last mile delivery options become more valuable and easier to use for people and more in their own purview, I would say. And let's say even that doesn't happen. Let's say they keep doing they keep going very well. How real is that threat? I think it is difficult to turn from an engineering perspective into a retailer perspective. Those are two really different business models. Not saying it can't be done, but I think you've got some time before that actually maybe starts to happen. But it depends probably how comfortable they are with risk. And that's the crazy thing about the funding that goes out there too. That funding allows you to do a lot more from a risk perspective too, where in the past you never would have stood up a store without having as much experience doing it or knowledge of how to do it. Now, I don't know that people care as much. The VC community, if they think that kind of shiny object is out there in the distance, they'll go after it. So I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth purposely, but I think that's because it's a very nuanced argument.
All right, and our final question.
So I love thinking about psychology.
Uh-oh.
And I was wondering if you could comment on the dichotomy between what I see between convenience and experience. So for me, I'm the kind of guy who wants to shoot a free throw before I buy my Nikes. I want to build my IKEA furniture. There's something about that. So can you talk about that dichotomy?
Yeah, so the question from the audience was, you know, about the difference in mindset or difference in between a convenience product and, let's say, a product that you want a little bit more focus on, right? So the example that was given was, you know, your pair of Nikes, the IKEA furniture. As I was building the slides from this morning for Q4, or yeah, I didn't build this morning, over the last couple of weeks.
sure.
I think, you know, when you look at that chart, so there's this chart that talks about how, you know, Facebook owns a ton of time, and, you know, Facebook and Instagram, but yet Amazon's figured out how to do commerce. I think there's a really interesting play there, right? When you say, Amazon's great for the bottle of ketchup and for the paper towels and toilet paper and things like that, because you know you get it quick, you don't really care, you've probably bought it 100 times before and they're fast and easy. But if you're going to buy a brand new couple $100 pair of Red Wing shoes, it's not necessarily something that you think about or for most of us on the way home and quickly ask Alexa to buy for you. And I think there's a huge gap there. Now, but like Instagram and Facebook, a great way to get that in front of you, a great way to research, a great way to ask all your friends about those intricate purchases. But also, like, the trust thing, you're not going to buy a $300 pair of Red Wing shoes via, you know, the swipe up opportunity on Instagram stories. Yeah, there's a huge gap there, and I think there's platforms out there that are serving both of those, but they're separated ways. Amazon, though, opening physical stores and having opportunity for people to help you, and there's something there, and also with reviews. Like, if I'm choosing between three different pairs of Red Wings, and I know that there's 150 reviews on each one of them, and then I could also go try them on in the store and know that that whole experience is the best of best in a familiar way, there's an opportunity there. So I think it's a play, right? Everyone's kind of going for the opposite category. And I think it'll be interesting to follow.
I would say, I think convenience is contextual, right? I mean, I was making the argument this morning that convenience has almost been ceded to digital. Which is true in a lot of instances, but in some cases it's not. Like, actually, that's what's beautiful. The beauty of Amazon Go is that in that context, that physical experience is actually more convenient for, you know, people that are living in an urban location that want to go in quickly on their lunch hour. That convenience aspect really matters. So I think it all comes back to what are you trying to do and what are you trying to accomplish for whom and when, right? The beauty experience is, there's aspects of the beauty experience categorically that an in-store experience can be more convenient, quote unquote, for people, which is why that category has taken longer to transition online as well. So I think it just depends on that. I think the brilliance of what an Amazon does, or people that are very customer focused, is they try to think about that, right? Anne talked about this morning. What are the universal truths that people want within these contexts? And then how do we create and design experiences over time to meet those needs? So it's hard to say it's one catch-all, but I think it matters, you know, with what specific situation you're looking at.
And I don't think you can limit convenience to, like I was talking about this morning, I don't think you can limit convenience to just being doing something faster. It's about, like, mixing a world of experiences. It's, you know, being at IKEA and, like, having the ability to ship something directly to your house
instead of,
like, it's those hurdles that you kind of have to get over, and it doesn't always have to be, like, faster now, digital. It's how do you bring other experiences or services into a space that you're already going to be, or whether that's digital or in person.
Yeah, totally. That's great.
That was the unlock for me with Martin Patrick today, actually, when that was talked about, was, like, if you're a guy, a lot of guys don't shop that often. And so if you're going to go do it, oh man,
just
really make a day of it.
Yeah.
Martin Patrick's a little pricey, but it's still a pretty sweet idea.
Fancy.
But yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys. That was fantastic.
Yeah,
Dan, thank you so much for hosting us. What a great conference. Big round of applause.
Yeah.
Great audience. Housekeeping notes, Ann and I are at a grocery shop next week. Hopefully maybe we'll see some of you out there. I know some of you are attending. We'll be podcasting live from that event too. So if you're interested, we have a great lineup of guests. So please subscribe to the blog and follow us and you can hear all those great interviews. We're actually sponsored by a couple companies, Uberall and Takeoff Technologies. And as always, for those listening at home and those in the audience, be careful out there.